It was Reading's longest away trip of the campaign on Saturday as they travelled to Middlesbrough, but they were unable to bring back any points back to Berkshire following a 1-0 defeat. My name is Ollie Allen, guest hosting this number 202 of the Tireless End podcast, and I am joined, fresh from his long trip to the Northeast, Simeon Pickup, editor of the Tireless End. How's it going, Sim?
I'm very well, thank you. Actually feeling pretty upbeat after that, despite a loss. I'm happy with the performance and, pretty optimistic despite the result.
Yeah, I think gauging the reaction on social media after the result yesterday, I think that was always take a bit of a pinch of salt, really. But I think you were one of the more positive ones after that 1-0 defeat. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in just a second. Before we get into the recap, I will just mention the Patreon campaign is still going. Our little tip jar, if you like that, you're more than welcome to head over there and just give us a little bit of cash money to sort of help us along the way, sort of boost us whenever we get these demoralising defeats, and helps us keep producing the content, the podcast, and the website and stuff like that. So please do head over there and be as kind as you would like to keep us going. And without further ado, then we'll get into the recap for Middlesbrough 1, Reading 0.
View from the Tireless End.
Recapping this week's Championship action.
Marvin Johnson's free kick from the right on the hour mark being the difference in that game at the Riverside, and it was the sixth win in a row for Middlesbrough against Reading, which is quite an alarming statistic really, but five of those six wins have been by just the one goal. As I mentioned, Sim, as you mentioned as well, you were quite positive actually despite that defeat compared to sort of everybody else, whether they were at the game or listening on the radio. But overall, was that a fair result for Reading?
No, I don't think so, actually. I thought we defended really well. We created certainly enough chances to win the game. And overall, based on that, kind of like statistically, in terms of the number of chances at either end, I think we were more than capable of coming away with the result. Obviously, it's about taking your chances. It's about keeping the ball out of your own net. And simply put, we didn't do that. But the underlying data from that game, the underlying kind of trends and what I saw on the pitch, I thought was really positive. To be honest, obviously we haven't clicked enough. We haven't got that real cutting edge to be able to make sure we come away with 3 points in matches like this. But that being said, I think there's more to be positive about than to be negative about in the long run.
We will get onto that data in just a minute, but it is fair to say that it was overwhelming in Reading's favour. But first of all, looking at the team selection, which did sort of raise perhaps a few eyebrows when it was released at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The one that's perhaps less surprising was Andy Rinomota. He came back in for Pele, who had some lengthy away trips with Guinea-Bissau in the international break. So no surprise to see Rinomota, last year's player of the season, come back in to that defensive midfield role. But perhaps the surprise was up front, where Yaku Mate and Lucas Boye came in for George Puskas and Lucas Joao. Was that a surprise for you, Sim?
Not hugely, to be honest. I think they all made sense, all those changes. It'd be a little bit odd if the thinking behind it wasn't obvious. But in two cases, you've got players that have gone away on international duty. And I think both of them played twice. Puskas playing twice for Romania. Pele playing twice as well. Bringing them out of the side just to give them a little bit of a rest and then maybe bringing them on makes sense, I think. Lucas Joao, on the other hand, is done all right, but I don't think he's been as reliable as you really want him to be, particularly in terms of holding the ball up and bringing others into play. So bringing someone else in for him, particularly joint top scorer Yaku Mate, makes perfect sense. And particularly with that front two that we ended up with, Lucas Boye kind of playing off Yaku Mate, it did make sense. We were able to hit Borough on the counter really effectively in the first half, I thought. And on the whole, it's just changes that make sense. And sure, it looks bad on team sheet when Puskas record signing isn't in there and Joao, expensive signing as well, isn't in there. But the reasons that we brought the other players in made sense. And based on the chances we created, I thought if one of those goes in, then there's not really any complaints, to be honest. Especially when you look at Puskas, the kind of the chances that he's missed, not only against Middlesbrough, but also in the last couple of weeks, it's not a clear-cut decision to put him in and expect that he's going to score goals. It has to be a meritocracy. It has to be if he's missing chances and give an opportunity to someone else, whether it's someone like Mate, who's scored the same number of goals this season as Puskás has, or Boye, who can offer a lot in that number 10 role himself and really give us something else going forward. And on the whole, I'm not too worried about the team selection, but obviously it looks that little bit worse when obviously we don't get the result.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I think if we come away with that from the game, you know, with a win or even a draw, really, and say Mate or Boye had got on the score sheet, it wouldn't quite look as bad on my reflection. And it is easy to forget, really, that Mate has three goals this season. Two of them, of course, coming against Plymouth in the EFL Cup. But Gomez did justify his team selection. He said that he would do it all over again. He picked the same players. He said that Pelé and Puskás travelled for their national team, as you said. But that wasn't the only reason that they didn't play. The reason was that I did not like the way that they played in the last game, that 2-0 defeat to Charlton, where I know Puskás certainly missed a good opportunity. And, you know, he has got a lot of forwards to pick from. He's got, you know, as well as those four, he's got Daniel Ode as well, who came back onto the bench yesterday as well. And, you know, is there something to be said perhaps for a consistent starting lineup? I think, you know, there are a few comments, you know, whether he should stop tinkering. I think apart from that attack, though, you know, it's quite a fairly settled lineup. I think certainly the back five, we'll see Miazga's injured at the moment, but the back three, Morrison, Moore and McIntyre, is, you know, you can guarantee that. And also the wing backs, you know, no one's challenging Andy Iredom really at right back. And at left back, Omar Richards has got that spot nailed down for the time being. And Tyler Blackett came back onto the bench from injury. But is the question, you know, does Gomez really know his best starting 11 at the moment?
I don't think it's necessarily a case of just having one 11 and sticking with it. Obviously, you want consistency. You want to not have to make changes for the sake of it. And I don't think Reading are doing that. As you say, we've got a pretty consistent back five, obviously with a goalkeeper as well. Midfield is pretty consistent with Swift and Ajara playing regularly. But it's more than okay to just make a few changes here and there based on the circumstances. As I said earlier, the front two, bringing those two in, made some sense in terms of our approach to the game, but also Rinomota coming in and offering us that bit more energy, that kind of fresher legs in the midfield when Pelé's gone off on international duty. I think consistency for consistency's sake is a bad thing, just trying to keep the same team going regardless of who you're playing, regardless of how your players are doing, and regardless of how fit or tired they may be. So consistency can look good, but you can do it too much, basically. A few changes, logical changes here and there, are absolutely fine.
Looking at the game itself then, it was 0-0 at half time, Reading perhaps unlucky not to be ahead at the break. They didn't take their chance. I think Lucas Boye and Yaki Mate both, you know, were sort of set clear a couple of times but couldn't quite take their chances, which is a sign of things to come. Really, but after the break, Middlesbrough did have the ball in the back of the net, but it was flagged offside. But that was no warning for Reading, clearly. As on the hour mark, Middlesbrough did score. It was a foul from Michael Morrison on the right, and then Marvin Johnson's free kick sort of, you know, was whipped in, and no one got a touch on that. And was that preventable for you, Sim? I think obviously it was Middlesbrough's first shot on target of the entire game. You know, it wasn't, you know, sort of a blistering free kick. It was sort of a free kick that all it needed was sort of one touch from a defender to try and clear it, I think.
I guess it was preventable, but the fact that we're talking about kind of like the first shot on target in the 60th minute, a little bit of a lucky goal. Not obviously we can do better with it, but I just think that the fact that we're talking about their first shot on target after about 60 minutes does show that we were good defensively anyway, and I think they ended the game with two shots on target. So to kind of be looking at that defensive performance and having to nitpick about a goal that's won them the game, I wouldn't read too much into it, to be quite honest with you. If you do play well defensively, so it is fine margins, exactly. And if we'd taken one or two of our chances in the first half, maybe gone into half-time 2-0 up, which we could well have done, and then we can see that kind of goal, you wouldn't be too worried about it. Or if we take two chances at the end, which we very nearly did, if it weren't for Darren Randolph pulling off some really good saves, then we wouldn't really worry about that goal. But it's just fine margins at the moment, and I think we can risk reading too much into that kind of goal.
Yeah, I think it sort of depends, you know, now how Reading react to this defeat. I think if we go on and win a couple of games now, you know, if we win against Blackburn at the weekend, you know, you can talk about their bounce back ability. And I think in context, I actually think Middlesbrough will go on and do quite well this season. I think they're finding their feet under Jonathan Woodgate. You know, but they've got some good players in there. Brittesom Longer is always dangerous in the Championship. And, you know, they're a well-organised side. I think they will go on to do quite well this season. Perhaps not make the top six, but I think they are a better side than their start of the season has suggested. And we may well look back on this game at the end of the season and sort of say it wasn't that bad a result. But reacting to going behind, Jose Gomez brought on George Puskas and Lucas Shaw. But not for Mate and Boyer. He actually brought them on for Tom McIntyre and Annie Rinomata in the 67th minute. So we had four strikers then on the pitch. I mean, was that good to see, Cynthia? I think obviously, you know, Gomez was clear, you know, trying to get that equaliser, but, you know, was it too drastic a change, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't think the shape was too bad. You don't want to kind of change shape too much. We kind of
was it a 4-2-4?
Kind of looked like a 4-2-4. I know Gomez said after the game that he kind of had Puskas in as a number 10. I'm not too sure about that. It did look a lot like a kind of a 4-2-4 with just Swift and Ajara in the middle and then kind of Mate on the right and Boyer down the left. But it just meant the shape of the team went. Swift and Jara as a two is not a good idea, and chances did open up for Middlesbrough when they could get in behind our midfield and run at our defence, which they'd find it a lot harder to do if Rinomhota were still on the pitch, basically. So I think kind of sacrificing our midfield essentially just in the sake of putting on another striker was not a particularly good idea. Maybe going to something like a 4-3-3, taking off a centre-back and putting on an extra forward would have made sense. Would have been a more sensible, kind of cautious way to kind of try and change the game. When you do something like going 4-2-4, you can end up making it worse because you don't have enough presence in the midfield. And yes, you might have players in the final third, more of them, but you need to be able to get the ball to them. You need to be able to stop the opposition from making it 2-0, which Borough could easily have done on a few occasions, considering how open our midfield was at times. So I wonder what Gomez is trying to do at times like that, because there was another example, I think it was against Charlton, where he swapped both his wing-backs for wingers, which seemed like a kind of a drastic change that went too far and almost undermined us, took away our shape and didn't really give us a better opportunity of getting back into the game. But there you go. It's something for him to learn from, and hopefully he does.
I think you can look at it two ways. I think certainly it strikes to me as though he sort of panicked, and you mentioned that example against Charlton as well, that he took off the two wing-backs. But at the same time, I think, you know, when obviously Yapstan was in charge, we sort of, you know, complained that he was being too stubborn and sort of, you know, sticking too rigidly to his, you know, philosophy. And, you know, when we were losing games, you know, he wasn't changing anything. So you can probably credit Gomez to an extent for trying to look for an answer. But I'd suggest he might want to look for an answer in a different place. But let's get on to those stats then. 18 shots for Reading yesterday, more than any other Championship side on Saturday afternoon. And the XG expected goals for what it's worth. At Middlesbrough, it was one, so obviously they got that one. At Reading were 1.9, which again was the highest in the Championship yesterday. Dan Randolph in the Middlesbrough goal made seven saves yesterday as well. A quite incredible performance from him. We talked about it briefly, Sim, but was it a case of Reading simply being unlucky, or was it then not taking their chances? Because, as I say, if this game is a one-off and you can put it down to Randolph's performance, you know, who is one of the best keepers in this division, can you put it down to that? I mean, I suppose it only time will tell really whether the same happens again next weekend and we don't take our chances against Blackburn. But is this more of an anomaly rather than, you know, a start of a trend?
It's hard to tell, really. I'm not too kind of I'm a little bit kind of not entirely sold on XG. I think it's really useful for some things, obviously for showing you how much, how many chances you make and how dangerous you are in front of goal. But obviously you do need to take your chances, and that is the key bit. So obviously it's really encouraging that we're getting 1.9, which is a really kind of, it's a really high score, especially when we've not scored at all on the day.
Yeah.
But
away from home as well, it's a very, very high score.
Exactly, yeah. And but still coming away from that without scoring, that's something that we need to take responsibility for. It's not just about coming up with the chances. It's about someone just simply putting the ball in the net. And
yeah,
got a really good chance falling to Puskas that he doesn't take. Some other chances, I think, to Boye and Mate. Zhao went really close with a really good header that Randolph did really well to keep out. We just need to make sure that we're putting the ball in the net, simply put. And it looks good, kind of looking at the XG and seeing, oh, we've got 1.9, we're fine. If we can keep that up, then brilliant. But obviously we need to start converting it. And there's been so many times in the last couple of years when we've done really badly on XG, and the opposition has registered a lot higher, and we still managed to kind of scrape a win somehow. I think there was the game against Bristol City at home last season, for example, when we didn't do particularly well for XG, but we were really clinical, really took our chances, and Bristol City had some really good chances that they didn't take most of. So if we get into that kind of habit of not being able to take the chances despite making a lot of them, it doesn't really mean that much.
I think certainly in when we finished third on the understand, I think XG had us down to finish, you know, about 17th, 18th. So I'd agree. I think stats are useful in some senses, but, you know, ultimately, you know, the only stat that matters is that Middlesbrough won 1-0 and they got the 3 points and Reading didn't. But you mentioned that just having someone to put the ball in the back of the net there, and we hope that George Puskas is that man. He's got 3 goals so far this season, but, you know, he missed another good chance yesterday. Also, you know, probably should have scored against Charlton. You know, he had that fantastic opportunity for a hat-trick against Cardiff as well. Should we be expecting more from Puskas? You know, I think you could potentially say that's harsh. You know, he had a very good international break with Romania that we'll talk about later. You know, and he's our joint top scorer, but, you know, he's come from Inter Milan. You know, we're paying big money for him, obviously not all in one go, but, you know, when all the money's paid, you know, we'll have paid around 8 million for him, you know, our record signing. Should we be expecting more for a player of sort of his, you know, pedigree and his value?
I think it's still really early days, to be honest. The fact that we're talking about, I think he scored, what, 3 goals in about 6 appearances, something like that. It's not awful. Obviously, he's missed a lot of chances, but some players do sometimes just take a while to get into a rhythm. And that's not just about having the ability and having the right kind of role in the team, but also just psychologically being there and being settled and being really confident. It can take a little while, especially when you've come from, I think, just playing in the Italian kind of first and second tiers. I don't know if it was in the third tier as well, but that's a big change from being in there and then having to come over to a completely new country, to a new league, and then be asked to immediately start scoring a lot of goals. Obviously, with the big expectation of having a big transfer fee behind him as well. So I'd much rather judge him in a couple of weeks or a couple of months when we've really seen kind of how well he can do when he's settled. At the moment, we can read a bit too much into him missing a lot of chances. Obviously, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating, but it's about how he does over the course of weeks and months, not just the first few games.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of hype around him. Obviously, you know, he did very well in the under-21 Euros in the summer as well. And as you mentioned, a big transfer fee. And to be honest, I mean, I don't think, you know, obviously his goals were massively beneficial, and we're, you know, greatly appreciative of it, but in many ways, you know, that his goal against Wickham and his 2 against Cardiff and getting man the match, and, you know, especially that being on Sky, I think a lot of hype has been generated around Puskas now. And we, you know, if he was going to be a striker scoring, you know, every game, he wouldn't be at Reading, you know, so that we're going to have to expect, you know, he's going to have off days, and hopefully, And as you say, as he becomes more accustomed to Reading and to playing with his teammates, hopefully he can put those chances away. There was a little bit on social media after the game. You know, I tend to stay off Twitter after defeats like these, about Jose Gomez and sort of whether he should be criticised or not. You know, I think largely probably to do with his team selection and his substitutions and whatnot. We are 17th in the table now, 2 wins, 1 draw. And 4 defeats from our opening 7 games. Is that where we should expect Reading to be, Sim? I think we shouldn't be expecting top six. I think that's the way I see it. I think the transfers and sort of the mad rush of signing players in the last few days of the window sort of maybe boosted our expectations higher than they should have been.
Yeah, I think it's just too early to properly judge, to be honest. Obviously, there's really high expectations considering the amount of positivity there was from the transfer window, a lot of talent brought in, a lot of money spent, but it's early days, and the fact that we are playing well, we're making enough chances to win games. Yeah, it's frustrating that we're not winning games as much as we should be, not getting the results, but it does take time for the results to come in. You look at Norwich last season, who were, I think, around about 19th for the first block of the season, didn't really get going until a little while into the season, but then really started to click, really started to put it together and stormed up the table. And I'm not saying we're necessarily going to get that as Norwich did, but we do still have some really good players. And when you get them really clicking, really understanding each other, because they don't know each other that well, to be honest, at the moment. They've been here for a couple of weeks together, and it does take time to really gel that kind of team. Not just into a team that can play well and create chances, but to win games regularly. That's not an easy thing to do overnight. Despite a lot of money being spent, it does take time and patience. And at the moment, I would just say, be patient with Gomez, let him build it, let him carry it on and really kind of put his stamp on this team. And I'm sure it will pay off really nicely.
I think it is fair to, you know, criticise him, you know, from yesterday. I think, I mean, obviously he hasn't admitted it himself, but I think, you know, really, you know, looking at that lineup, you know, I think obviously, and the substitutions, I think, you know, no manager, you know, not even Pep Guardiola is not immune from, you know, criticism. Obviously, you know, his side lost to Norwich yesterday, and I'm sure, you know, pundits on Match Today and whatnot and on Sky will, you know, there's no reason why he can't be criticised for that. And I think it's the same with Gomez. You know, you can criticise him to an extent, but still, you know, believe he's the right man for Reading. I think it's important to make that distinction, I think. And also, you know, we haven't been thrashed 3 or 4 nil. You know, we've lost 1-0 in a game where we had a lot of chances, and on another day, you know, might have, you know, come away with something. So I think you have to see how the next couple of weeks go. I think certainly, you know, if we don't, you know, win any of the next 5 games, then you can certainly start to ask questions, but you definitely can't expect, you know, miracles overnight. I think, you know, it's quite funny, really, sometimes reading the reaction. I think, you know, after the win against Cardiff and the win against Huddersfield, you know, people talking about promotion, I think that, you know, that really is premature. And I think in many ways that's hindered the reaction now, I think, because those wins have sort of got expectations up along with those signings, as you say. You know, we are now feeling the force of that after defeats, and you know, we probably will lose more games than we win this season. But you know, I think we're in a lot better position than we were this time last year, and we have to be patient. I think, you know, we haven't even won this time last year. I think our first win of the season against Preston was around this time last year, so we have to be patient with him. And as I say, hopefully, you know, we can get back to winning ways next weekend. But looking briefly at the Championship as a whole, then, one manager who might be on the brink of losing his job is Nathan Jones at Stoke. They lost again yesterday, 2-1 to Bristol City. They are bottom of the table on just 1 point. No wins to their name so far. And I just thought I'd bring up an interesting point, Sim. Obviously, he joined Stoke from Luton last season, which did very, very well with Luton in League One and League Two. Is it perhaps suggesting that the jump from League One to Championship is too big for these managers? You know, we saw it again with Paul Hurst at Ipswich last season. Done very well at Shrewsbury the year before. Couldn't really get anything out of the Ipswich side. Didn't make the best signings. And I think obviously it's a discussion that you know we had, you know, when Paul Clement was sat. I think Nathan Jones was certainly one of the names that was mentioned that people might want to come up. Looking at these managers, you know, has Nathan Jones perhaps gone too early to Stoke? You know, I think obviously in hindsight, would he have been better off staying at Luton?
I don't think the jump is necessarily too big. I mean, we're talking about managers who have done really well in the lower leagues. Paul Hurst with Shrewsbury and Nathan Jones with Luton. They've earned their chance to make the move up to the Championship. And they might not do particularly well when they get there, but that's not necessarily just on them. It could just be that the fit isn't right when they go to these bigger clubs. Nathan Jones has a big job on his hands to get Stoke really back up into the Premier League, to really turn around a disappointing few years for them. That's not something you can do overnight, and he might not be the right man for them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's a bad manager or not good enough for the Championship. It can just be a bad fit. It's the same thing with Paul Hurst at Ipswich. He was coming into a club that had been basically the Mick McCarthy show for a number of years. And I think anyone who had come into that club at that time, I don't think they spent a huge amount of money that summer either. It was going to be a big job. And sure, it's going to be daunting for someone who's coming up from the lower leagues. But I think just to kind of blame it on the manager isn't quite right. We've seen other managers who have kind of worked their way up from the lower leagues and done well at a higher level. I think Dean Smith was down there with Walsall a while ago. Chris Wilder at Sheffield United obviously took him up from League One. I know that's kind of a different case, considering that he got promotion in the first place for Sheffield United. But it does show that lower league managers can do well. They can, if they have the right fit, then there's every reason that they can impress. And maybe if Nathan Jones had come into Reading, a different club to Stoke City with different expectations and different ideas at the club, maybe he would have done as well as he has done with Luton. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of expectation on Stoke as well. I think, you know, you look at the players they brought in the summer as well. You know, Nick Powell, Liam Lindsay, you know, some very good players. So obviously Danny Cowley, of course, has come up. He's the new Huddersfield manager, moving from Lincoln, who he's achieved, you know, unprecedented success with, done, you know, incredibly well at Lincoln. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on at Huddersfield. But that is the recap then all sorted. So it's time to move on into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
A pretty small mailbag this week then, just the three questions. I think a lot of the reaction really was over Jose Gomez on Twitter yesterday. But the first one comes from Mark Mayer, a regular host of this podcast, who is off sunning himself somewhere this week. He says, what will happen first? Start taking our chances or they dry up completely. So again, this has been linked to a lot of what we've been talking about in that recap. Sim, will we take our chances before they dry up?
Yeah, I think we will. The underlying signs are good. I think the shape is good. We've got a good amount of creativity. I don't see us being unable to create chances anytime soon. It is just about confidence to take the chances. I'm kind of reminded of this time in 2015-16, actually, when we did actually start pretty well, but before we started winning games, before the Brentford game, then the Ipswich game, we were creating a lot of chances, we were getting a lot of shots in, but just didn't quite click until a little bit of the way through the season. I think it was after the first international break, actually, that we really started to click and start taking our chances. It's just about patience, just about making sure we get to that position where we are taking our chances. But I'm fine with it, to be honest. I'm confident that we will, that we will get there.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I'm optimistic. I think you mentioned the creativity we have. You know, you've got the likes of John Swift, who I think has still created the most chances in the Championship this season. And obviously Obi Ajar as well. And the wing-backs, Yeardom and Richards. I think it is just a case of being patient. I think we can't expect, you know, things to happen overnight, and hopefully, as you know, as we said, as we you know, this team gets more used to each other. You know, we're still in the very early stages of this team. You know, we saw all those players arrive the last few days of the window, and you know, there's been no pre-season or whatever. There's been no friendlies to try anything out. You know, Gomez has thrown this system, you know, right into competitive championship action. So you know, that's always going to have a few teething problems. Seth Dakota Shenega says on yesterday's performance, very poor. Boy ruined that game for us. Every attacking movement came apart at his feet. We haven't talked too much about individual performances so far, Sim. You gave Lucas Boy a 5, I think, in your player ratings, which was the joint lowest out of all the set. How was his performance yesterday?
It's a weird one, really. It's a frustrating one. I'm kind of loath to say that he was bad, hence not giving him a 4 or anything. But he did seem frustrating, to be honest. There were a lot of times, as Seth said, that a lot of attacks kind of fell apart with him. He either kind of tried to overplay it or just got sloppy with the ball at his feet, to be honest. I don't know if that's a case of a lack of confidence or lack of sharpness or whatever it is, but he certainly does have the ability to be playing well and creating a lot of chances. I like his work rate a lot. He certainly gets about the pitch. He puts in a lot of tackles. I had a look at the stats from yesterday, and he made more tackles, or at least attempted more tackles than anyone else on the pitch with 10. And for a number 10 himself, putting in that sheer number of challenges does show his work rate, just does show the work ethic that we've got from him. But it's just about sharpening up in the final third and creating more, basically. He had one shot from inside the penalty box, which for me isn't enough. Whether it's a number 10 or a forward, he needs to be contributing more in the final third, which is why I gave him a 5 out of 10 on the day. But as with the team as a whole, there's every reason to believe that he can sharpen up, he can improve that little bit more and get that bit of consistency. And hopefully he does. Hopefully he gets a goal sooner than later. And if he does, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, I think he's another one that's obviously new to English football. You know, he doesn't speak the language very well at the moment, you know, so that might cause a few problems for him. But, you know, look, he's one that comes with, you know, decent pedigree. You know, he's played Champions League football. You know, he came through River Plate's academy, you know, so hopefully, as you say, he does come good. And finally then, the final question in the mailbag is from Daniel Breen, who says, what's your go-to meal deal choice? I'll kick things off. I'll go with a tuna and sweet corn sandwich, some barbecue hula hoops, and a Diet Coke. So let me know your thoughts on that one if you want to, Sim.
See, I have a bit of a problem with meal deals, actually, because I'm one of those weird people that doesn't like mayonnaise, which is a massive problem when it comes to meal deals, because if you try and get a sandwich from pretty much anywhere that sells them pre-prepared, you can't get them without mayonnaise, which is, for me, an absolute disgrace. And
you have just ham.
Ideally, I'd have a BLT.
Okay.
Lovely, kind of balanced sandwich. But
yeah.
I just can't stand mayonnaise. It's all creamy and squirmy, and it's just not for me. Ideally, if you can go into a sandwich shop and get it made for you in front of you, you can ask without the mayonnaise, which is why Subway is often a lifesaver for me. But sandwiches often not for me. Good bag of plain hula hoops always goes down well, and then maybe a Diet Coke with it.
We're both clearly hula hoops fans. And what was the food like at the Riverside yesterday? Did you have any other tray on the way there?
I went into town for a KFC, actually, which took ages to order. And the problem with the KFC machine in Middlesbrough that I found was it was preset to Polish. So I was there trying to work out how to order a bonus banquet in Polish, which I eventually managed to do quite impressively. Didn't sample the food out at the Riverside, unfortunately. Oh. It's a nice ground, actually, I think. Yeah. Very friendly staff there, very helpful. One of those really nice modern stadiums that adds a little bit of character as well. And yeah, all around, it's a good day out. I don't know how I managed to get from day out at the Riverside from sandwiches not that long ago, but there you go. That's the joy of podcasting.
Well, very well done for venturing into the middle of Middlesbrough.
Thank you.
But talking of bites then, I'll try and make that seamless link into news bites.
Oh, dear.
Reading News Bites
on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right then, not much had gone on during the international break. It was fairly quiet for Reading. Looking at the players who went away with their countries, George Puskas was the only senior player who sort of did anything of note, really. He got an assist against Spain and a goal against Malta, and we got a lot of love for him on social media. But Kanaya Boyce-Clark, the young academy goalkeeper for Reading, was the hero for the England under-17s as he saved two penalties against Poland to win the Sirenka Cup. We've got no idea what the Sirenka Cup is, but it's a trophy, and Raheem Sterling congratulated him on winning it. So, again, he's been linked to Man United this summer. Kanaya Boyce-Clark, he signed a new contract for him. Should we expect to see him, you know, sort of in the first team squad anytime soon? I think, obviously, there's a lot of hype about him, obviously, doing very well for England, you know, being linked to these big teams, you know, played for Reading's under-23s at such a young age. You know, do you think we'll see him in squad this season? You know, does he need a loan? Will it be a couple of years? Obviously, you know, I think goalkeepers' development's a little bit different to outfield players.
To be honest, I'd be really worried if we saw him in any meaningful sense in the first team in the next one or two seasons. He's 17 years old at the moment. He's far too young to be properly getting involved with the first team. Obviously, if he can train with the first team and maybe go on the odd journey with the first team on an away day, then that's good experience for him. And particularly winning a trophy with England's youth side as well. Really good experience, really good for him. But at the moment, it's just about being patient with him, letting him gradually develop, gradually mature as a player. Because we've seen so many players in years gone by who have been very talented, but just haven't been able to make the step up for whatever reason. Danny Loader is unfortunately a good example of that. Someone who's really talented, but hasn't made the proper step up into the first team. And if you don't do that, then all that work in the academy, all that development, it's for nothing. So it's just about making sure he develops gradually and gets there eventually. It's a problem for him that he's got all of this expectation on him, that he's so highly rated, that he's linked to Man United. That's something that he's got to deal with, unfortunately. That's something that he's got to keep on top of. And if he does, we've got a really good goalkeeper on our hands. But in the meantime, no expectations of him being in the first team for ideally at least another 2 or 3 years.
I would agree. I think it's very easy to hype someone up when they're doing very well in the academy. But I think especially with goalkeepers, you know, we've seen with Jao Virginia, who's, you know, done very well with Everton's academy and, you know, sort of, you know, did very well for their under-23s last season, got a lot of praise from both Marco Silva and from David Unsworth, you know, but came into senior football with Reading, you know, and sort of, you know, made that mistake against Haaland, hasn't been in the team since Raphael came in. So I think certainly with goalkeepers, there's a lot for young you don't see many young goalkeepers at this level. I think certainly until he's maybe at least 20, I think, and maybe even 21, 22, I think you know, it might be a while until we see him in the first team. But looking at the academy in general then, the under-23s beat West Brom 2-1 before the international break. They trailed at half-time. The second half goals from Thierry Nevers, Adam Liddell gave them the victory. They face Swansea again at the Medeski Stadium on Monday evening. The under-18s have beaten Swansea this weekend already. That was a 3-1 win to them on Saturday, and they face a tough game now against Chelsea next weekend. The women's team, they began the Women's Super League campaign for the new season last weekend with a 1-0 win over Liverpool. An excellent free kick from Farrah Williams as well, worth checking out if you haven't seen already. Some wonderful goals in the WSL so far this season. And as we are recording this, they are currently playing Man City. Obviously, City played, they finished second last season in the WSL, so a tough game for them. I believe it is 1-0, and the second half has just started. 1-0 to Man City, and the second half has just started. So work to do for the Reading women in that game, but there's some high expectations for them this season. Hopefully trying to get back into the top four with a couple of decent signings. The only other bit of news we sort of had in the last couple of weeks was that KSV Roeselare have gone bankrupt. That is, of course, the Belgian second tier team. that Daiju Lee, also the running co-owner, she has a stake in that. It's also, of course, where Tom Holmes has gone out on loan to this season. But similar, you could probably explain a little bit more to me. It's not quite as worrying as it perhaps seems.
Yeah, so it seems my understanding that she had been involved, obviously, for a couple of years now, and I think she bought into it in something like 2016, I think the summer of 2016, but maybe about a year ago she started taking a bit of a step back, wasn't putting in as much money as she had been, and I believe that she sold most of her shares, in the club a little while ago to some Brazilian investors, and has basically taken a big step back. And that's kind of ongoing at the moment, and that's because it hasn't been finished, has meant that KSC don't have the money. I think off the top of my head, they had their game called off on Saturday. So yesterday, as we're recording it, I don't think it's hugely worrying from our point of view, because it does seem more that it's teething problems for KSV in general, rather than something that we should really be worried about in terms of our ownership. It's also worth noting that it seems to be Dai Yong Gay who has more involvement with us. Obviously, Dai Zhu Li is heavily involved as well, but Dai Yong Gay, who I don't believe is involved with KSV, Rosalar, is the main man at Reading, essentially. So I wouldn't be too worried.
Yeah, he's the one providing the money. Obviously, he's got his own involvement in Beijing Ren, of course, over in China, where Shania Luca is as well. I think the debt was to a local catering company, I think. Was sort of just an issue with the new management structure. Of course, Brian Tepperton, formerly at Reading, he left KSV as well in the summer. I think it's just an issue with changing over management structures. Obviously, of course, if Reading go bankrupt in 12 months' time, then we can all look back on this and say, we told you so. But I don't think, fingers crossed, touch wood, it's nothing, hopefully, for us to worry about.
I think it's also worth noting quickly, with Reading, we are still an attractive club to invest in. I know we've not had a particularly good couple of years since coming down from the Premier League, but there has been interest fairly constantly in us. I remember the, I think it's kind of 2013-14, when there were a huge number of clubs, of investors rather, that wanted to get involved. Obviously, I had links with the Chinese for quite a while before they eventually invested. I think it was Dmitry Rybovalev from Monaco, who was also interested in potentially getting involved at some point since they took over, if memory serves correctly. We are an attractive club to invest in, so even if the Chinese owners do lose that little bit of interest themselves, I am confident that someone else is going to come in and put in some money. So, yeah, it can look a little bit worrying from KSV's point of view, but from our point of view, I wouldn't worry too much.
I wonder if we don't end up with owners like the Venkies at Blackburn, of course, and that's a link to the preview for this weekend as Reading host Blackburn.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Yeah, but it's Blackburn at home on Saturday at 3 o'clock at the Maleski Stadium. Blackburn are 11th in the Championship table after their 2-0 win over Millwall on Saturday. From their 7 games so far, they've won 3, drawn 1 and lost 3, scored 7 and conceded 7. So very much a middle-of-the-park team that I doubt will challenge either end of the table so far this season. But only Millwall, actually, their opponents yesterday, have scored fewer goals from open play this season. Dan Blackburn, who scored just 3 of their 7 goals, got from open play. I think 2 of them have come from set pieces, 1 from a penalty, and then the other one was an own goal. Of course, Bradley Dack is the star man for Blackburn. He's very dangerous from set pieces, got a good delivery on him, scored yesterday from open play, but an excellent strike from him. And considering Reading's goal, the goal Reading conceded, yesterday came from a set piece. Is that something perhaps to look out for at the weekend?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not certainly not as worried as I would have been last season. I think we've tightened up a lot defensively. This season we have been conceding far fewer goals, at least since we've gone to a back three. But certainly something we need to keep an eye on. And they do have some good players, some dangerous players. Dak, Downing as well. They've got some dangerous players in this side, and if we're not on it, there's every chance we could come away with a defeat. But it's the kind of game where I think if we take the initiative and we do take our chances, we've got every chance of winning. So I'm not too worried, as long as we do kind of turn the corner on that inability to take chances. But yeah, it's a game that I certainly would earmark for a win.
I was watching the highlights of that win over Mill for them yesterday. It's what a wonderful first goal from Derek Williams, who's a centre-back, but scored a fantastic goal from outside of the box. But actually, Blackburn spend a lot of time in the opposition third. 33% of their games have been spent in the final third, and only West Brom and Cardiff spend more time in the final third than Blackburn. Of course, Reading beat Cardiff and drew with West Brom, so potentially that's a good thing. But you know, we talked a lot about, you know, the mistakes that Gomez may have made with the team selection yesterday, Sim. What do you think he should change for the Blackburn game?
I guess I'd bring back Puskas just to give him another run out, to give him a good chance to basically just to turn a corner on his missed chances recently. I'd keep Boye in alongside him, and hopefully that'll give us a bit more of a dynamic front two rather than someone more physical like Zhao or Mate. Have some players who can come up with a bit more creativity like Boye in behind Puskas, who can hopefully get in behind. I think that's probably the right combination to be going for at home. Gives us a little bit more inventiveness and creativity going forwards. Generally, though, I wouldn't make any changes. I think the back three was fine, wing back's fine. I'd keep Rinham Hota as well. I thought he did well against Middlesbrough before he came off. Gave some good energy and really helped us to win the ball back a lot quicker than Pelé tends to do. Good option to have Pelé, but at the moment in time, I'd have Rinham Hota starting again. So just a few tweaks, but yeah, Nothing too much.
We didn't actually talk that much about Rinham Hota in the recap, which is, as I say, he came back in for Pelé. You know, is he the long-term option in there over Pelé? I think you obviously assume that Swift and Ajayi are sort of going to be in there, you know, for the rest of the season, but it's probably that's one of the positions that is sort of maybe up in the air between Rinham Hota and Pelé. Obviously, Pelé's only on loan. I think Gomez obviously, you know, brought him in because he might not see that Rinham Hota fits that role. But let me ask you this, Sim. Who do you think will play more games in that position this season?
I don't honestly know, to be quite honest, because Pelé is the more natural fit, but he just doesn't seem to quite have taken to Reading's taken to Championship football quite yet. He's not quick enough, I don't think. He's not purposeful enough, not just defensively, but also on the ball. That said, he is a good fit. He is the kind of person that's going to sit in there and break up the play. And there are going to be plenty of occasions when we do need that. Someone who can just sit in there and give us a bit more stability. Rinham Hota I do like, certainly with his energy and his ability to bring the ball up the pitch, which he did really well last season, especially. But he doesn't quite have that same positional sense, that same kind of discipline that Pelé does. But I do think it's perhaps notable that we're talking about two players who are very defensive approaches to that role in the team, sitting in front of the back three or the back four. We don't really have someone who can get on the ball and really start dictating the play, that kind of deep-lying playmaker. Essentially someone like Lewis Baker that we had last season. And for me, it's frustrating that we didn't get someone like that who can get on the ball and really move it about properly and let us dictate how the game is going, which is frustrating, especially when you see someone like Paul Coutts go on a free to, I think it was League One, really good at just keeping the ball and keeping it moving. And then bringing in someone like Charlie Adam, who doesn't really seem to fit that role either. I'm not sure if he's certainly not going to be the right option to come in and play regularly as a ball-playing midfielder. It's frustrating that we don't have that guy in the team. But it's something for Gomez to work out. And
yeah
at this moment in time, I couldn't tell you between Gomez and Rinham Hota who's gonna play more. It's good that we do have two defensive options so we don't miss one if the other's out. But it's still not an ideal position for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think put it this way, I think I'm glad the decision is between Renamata and Pele rather than David Myler and Liam Kelly, for example. Obviously, bless Liam Kelly, I don't think he's doing too well at Feyenoord. But looking at Blackburn's team, then obviously they made some good reinforcements in the summer. Stuart Downing, Bradley Johnson, Greg Cunningham, all coming in, all very decent Championship players, just sort of, you know, solidifying that side, giving them a little bit of experience. I think, you know, we spoke to Mikey Delapte, the Blackburn fan, for our season preview. I think he said that the side needed that experience. I think those three players especially have added that into the team. For me, I mentioned it a minute ago, I can't see Blackburn doing much yet. It's certainly not promotion this season, but equally, I don't think they'll be troubling the relegation spots either. In that sense, Sim, if we're saying they're going to be, you know, there or thereabouts in the mid-table this season, especially at home for Reading, you know, is this a game we should expect to be winning?
Yeah, certainly. And this is the kind of game that we really need to win if we're going to kick on. I think if you go back to the last couple of years, it's the kind of game that we're really worried about. Good, well-organised, dangerous mid-table side that we're probably not going to get much spare change out of. But now we do have the attacking players to really take the initiative and to really cause some problems. If we do go out there and take the initiative and really set the tempo of the game, I don't see why we can't win it, perhaps even fairly comfortably. No disrespect to Blackburn, but this is the kind of game that we need to take the initiative in and really make things happen.
Yeah, I would fully agree with that point, especially being at home. I think, you know, after the defeat to Charlton, I think we need something to lift the Mad Stad crowd a little bit. And so prediction time then, Sim. I don't have the standings actually after the Middlesbrough game. Mark will have those and should be able to update you all on those next week. I know I went for a 0-0 draw. I think you went for a 2-1 Reading win, Sim. So certainly no points for either of us. But what are you going to go for in this Blackburn game?
2-0 win. I think we've got enough to shut them out defensively. Then enough to take our chances down the other end. Might not be a comfortable 2-0 win, but I think we've got enough to get it done.
Yeah, I'm also going to go for a win. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win. I don't think we'll actually win many games by huge margins this season. I wouldn't be surprised if that 3-0 win over Cardiff in August turned out to be our biggest win of the season. Yeah, 1-0 Blackburn for me, 2-0, so 1-0 Reading for me, sorry, and 2-0 Reading for Sim. But that just about rounds up episode 202 of the Tarlest Den podcast this week. Sim, thank you very much for joining me. And well done again on making that trip up to Middlesbrough yesterday.
Yeah, thank you very much.
No worries at all. And Mark will be back next week to look back on that Blackburn game. But until then, thank you very much for listening. And come on, you Arse.